A media release earlier today telling us that the DA strongly supports COVID-19 vaccination but is opposed to mandatory vaccination. Gwen Ngwenya is the DA's head of policy and joins us now on the line from Johannesburg. Gwen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
If we can skip over your strong support for vaccination, because I think most sensible people would agree with that, there's more of a debate around the issue of mandatory vaccination. Why is the DA now coming out firmly against mandatory vaccination?
Right. Well, the reason is that, you know, aside from the individual benefit of getting vaccinated, which is to protect against severe death and, severe disease and death, the social risk has to be assessed if you're going to make it mandatory. And that social risk or harm by those who propose mandatory vaccine policies was usually based on alleviating pressure on the hospital system. We do not see significant pressure placed on the hospital system at present due to COVID-19. A secondary consideration was the fact that we also have epidemiologists telling us that over 70% of this African population has immunity either through vaccination or from prior infection. So we think those factors, inform our position. And maybe if I can add a third one, which is that, you know, COVID continues to be an age-related, continues to have an age-related risk profile, meaning that those who are over 50 and have comorbidities, maybe even healthcare workers, it might be better for us to focus our interventions on those particular categories of persons, but that a sort of blanket mandatory vaccination policy is not warranted.
Companies want compulsory vaccination for their workers, and they want them for several reasons, because the science shows that vaccinated people are less likely to infect other vaccinated people than unvaccinated people are likely to infect vaccinated people, and that vaccinated people tend to suffer considerably less severe symptoms, less likely to go to hospital. And so in order to protect the workforce and to protect the productivity of a particular company, various companies have said we are instituting these mandatory policies in the workplace. Do you allow them that choice, or are you also opposed to that?
Well, the policy is directed primarily at public institutions, but we do say that private institutions should be left to decide for themselves on a risk-based assessment. And I would urge that, you know, that isn't seen as a kind of now, you know, leeway for all and sundry to have a mandatory vaccination policy. I really do think that it's important that a risk-based assessment is done, and for those institutions to be able to decide for themselves whether or not to have a vaccination policy. But in the instance of a private institution wanting to institute a vaccine policy, we would also urge them to consider other alternatives. For example, the ability for the individual to submit a negative COVID test from the last 72 hours seems to be the practice, or to be able to show proof of prior infection, because we also know that natural immunity does offer some protection against COVID. So we wouldn't, you know, we think it's important to recognize those other alternatives. And there are alternatives that have been recognized in Europe, elsewhere, where there are these passports or certificates which don't only recognize vaccination, but also recognize a COVID test or prior infection.
One of the practical issues with that approach here in South Africa is how many people have been infected and have infection-derived immunity without ever having been tested. And those are people who carry some form of immunity, but they have no way of demonstrating that because they can't proffer their positive PCR test.
Yes, and those tests aren't as widely available that can confirm whether one has had COVID previously. But I think it's still better widening up the options, even though they aren't as accessible. So we also worry about those who are too poor to have a COVID, you know, who may not want to get vaccinated, but are too poor to get a COVID-19 test every 72 hours to prove that they're negative. So these alternatives aren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but we think that in high-risk scenarios where a company might be considering instituting a mandatory vaccine policy, at the very least, it does give other alternatives.
The science also tells us, Gwen, the science seems to tell us, I think we must acknowledge that the science is imperfect and developing on all of these issues, but the science seems to tell us that vaccination plus having survived COVID gives you even greater immunity. So should we not be doing more to get people to be vaccinated, even if they have survived COVID, been infected with it and survived it? Because that hybrid immunity becomes a kind of super immunity.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where our position of saying we strongly advocate for vaccination comes in. That whether you've had COVID previously or not, we do recommend that people get vaccinated for those very strong reasons. But this question, was really about should we publicly mandate it so for everyone? And so in that instance, you're not assessing the individual benefits of vaccination. You're trying to assess whether the public harm justifies coercion. And we're saying that we do not think that the public harm does, for the reason that COVID-19 vaccines do not give 100% immunity. So we can see that even those who are vaccinated do get infected and can also transmit the virus. And so we
they are considerably less impact. They are considerably less impactful than unvaccinated people, which the DA obviously recognises. Because I mean, I don't like the idea of coercion. I really don't. I went to a restaurant last night in Cape Town where, for the first time, I was asked to show my vaccine passport in order to gain entry to the restaurant. And I like that. I like that very, very much. But that's the individual choice of that restaurant. And I don't like coercion as a tool of government policy, as a tool of public policy, but we're not getting the population nearly vaccinated enough. And with that reality staring us in the face, I think we have to consider compulsory vaccination as an option.
Yes, but also the evidence doesn't show that we have done enough. I mean, it's one thing to say we've done all that is reasonably practical to get people to vaccinate, and still the vaccination rate is low, but haven't done that. And I think that we need to make sure that it is possible to vaccinate and that we go to where people are. It may seem perhaps absurd or unlikely for some people who live in suburban areas or who have ready access to transport to think that it is not readily available enough. But in fact, we do see in some provinces that people don't have, aren't able to access vaccination sites, and that there needs to be greater effort to meet people where they are, to expecting people to go to vaccination sites. So that means maybe having pop-up vaccination stations at taxi ranks, in malls, etc., but to go to the people instead of expecting people to go to the vaccination centre.
Gwen, I must put the view expressed to me by several listeners since you and I have been talking that you're doing this because you think it's going to play well with people that might otherwise not vote for the DA.
Well, I think quite the contrary, because this position is so nuanced and takes both considerations, those who are hesitant about a mandatory policy and those who are very much pro-mandatory policy. And we think we've arrived at a very sensible middle ground. So actually what this position is more likely to do is leave those who really want vaccine mandates frustrated, as well as those who don't want them, who think that our position is not strong enough because it does still, in higher risk situations, give the option, and also for private institutions, give them the option to institute a vaccine policy or those other alternatives. So I think a far more absolutist stance on our side would have been a signal of trying to maybe appease a particular faction. But its level of nuance, I think, mitigates against such an observation.
Gwen Ngwenya, the DA's head of policy, thanks for sharing that with us this afternoon.